Good to go? Yeah? Okay, officially, good morning, TechEd.
Good morning.
How is everybody? Good?
Yes.
Absolutely awesome, fantastic. Well, welcome along to my second session here at TechEd. This is a game of clouds. This is as part of my day job, I do a lot of Office 365 deployments, and I also dabble in, quite heavily actually, in Windows, Azure, and Active Directory, and Identity, and things like that. And I thought, let's put together, well, there was nobody more skeptical about cloud security than me 3 or 4 years ago. I was the most skeptical person here. In fact, if you remember that, we did a panel discussion on it, and I was really quite skeptical. But I got to tell you, Microsoft have made huge inroads over the last few years, and to be honest, they've made such growth, and these data centers are so huge, I want to announce here today something very special, that Microsoft are actually changing their name. Yes? They're now known as Hyperdyne Systems, okay? No, that's another story. And you'll be able to buy a Bill 2.0 soon, okay? So, who am I? So, my name is Andy Malone, if I've not met you before. I'm based in the UK, namely Scotland. I'm an MVP in enterprise security, and I specialize in enterprise security and cybersecurity forensics, and also, as I said, the cloud stuff as well. I travel extensively. I speak at a number of pretty large conferences, Dev Connections in the US. I'll be at Tech Mentor Live 360 in Orlando in November, if anybody's going to that. And if you're in Oslo, you'll see me in February in NIC, the NIC conference. So I hope to see you all there. If you can't make that, we also do an event, myself and Paula Yuniskovich, of course you know Paula, we do an event called the Cybercrime Security Forum, and the next one is in the Netherlands in February, okay? So for more details on that, you can find out who I am at my website, andymalone.org, okay? So that's me. Oh, by the way, did I mention I've written a book? Okay, the book is essentially Highlander meets Angels and Demons, but with volcanoes, okay? It's called The Seventh Day. It's available now. It's on books, it's on Kindle, and all of the stuff. So you can purchase that anywhere. If you have purchased it and you need me to sign it, then just bring it up at the end, and I will be happy to sign it for you. I have one more session tomorrow, which is my dark web session. That's the Tor network. We're going to look at that and investigate that tomorrow. I will be giving out another book, so make sure that you take a bookmark before you go. And if you're attending that session, again, there will be a little quiz tomorrow. Okay? And in fact, I'm going to give you a heads up on the quiz. Okay? For tomorrow, I want to know the name of the main character. Okay? So if you've got a bookmark and the name of the main character, that will be the question tomorrow. All right? Okay, so that makes it pretty easy, doesn't it? So what are we going to talk about? So we're going to talk about the industrial internet. So, you know, I showed a little video there about time. And isn't it amazing that within 100-odd years, look how much as a species that we've advanced and moved on. And actually, the rate of growth is actually quite frightening. So we've seen the Industrial Revolution. We've gone through the Internet Revolution. So in the 1990s, of course, we had Internet Explorer and a PC on every desk. And nowadays, it's all about the Industrial Internet. So it kind of feels almost like we're coming full circle, doesn't it? So we're going to talk about that, first of all. We'll also talk about what are your concerns and risks, by moving to the cloud. Because obviously, everybody has concerns, and you're all in different geographical locations, and you're all going to say, well, does my data go through GCHQ, or does it go through the NSA? Well, of course it does, but that's another story. we'll talk about the Snowden effect. I'm joking, by the way, when I said that. We'll talk about the Snowden effect and what effect that has on the industry. So a lot of people think that, you know, did he do a bad thing or did he do a good thing? Personally, I actually think he did a good thing for the industry, okay? Not necessarily a good thing for the NSA, but a good thing for the industry. And also, where do you stand legally with moving to the cloud. Oh, and where is your stuff? Where's your stuff? Who's got access to it? And how can you keep control of your data? Okay? And fortunately, that whole process is getting simplified now. Now, I've got to say that I've recently spent some time in a Microsoft data center. I was in the Dublin data center. And, you know, I can stand up here and I can tell you how secure and how wonderful that Microsoft is. But until you've actually visited one of their facilities, which are absolutely enormous on a scale that you've never seen, you can't comprehend the security levels that they go through. So when I talk about this today, it is through personal experience. So these are the topics today. This is what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about identity. I'm going to give a few demos, things like connecting to the cloud, Active Directory Federation services. We're going to talk about AAD sync, syncing your directory into the likes of Office 365. Now, when I talk about Windows Azure, I talk about Windows Azure Active Directory. And of course, Windows Azure Active Directory and Office 365, it's the same thing. It's the same general kind of infrastructure. So the first thing then is, obviously, we're in a changing world. That's what the videos were there for at the beginning. So we are moving forward at an incredible rate. Products, typical products, you know, I cannot remember, well, in fact, I can remember, the last time I actually held a physical DVD was 2 years ago. I have not held a physical DVD in 2 years, and I'm talking about movies too, but we won't talk about that. Now, when they talk about BYOD, or bring your own device, it's not bring your own device anymore. Yes, it's now bring your own data. So it's how can I secure that data? Because essentially, you can access that data anywhere, whether it's on an actual phone, a mobile device, the web, through an application, and so on. So there's a new kind of administration model. Who's got access to my data? How do I get access to it? And so on. And the threat landscape is evolving. As I said yesterday, certainly on PCs, it's now about compromising not just PCs, it's now about compromising traffic. So they want to try and intercept your traffic. So the typical kind of drive-by attack is still up there pretty viciously, I would say. Everybody's got the snooping fears. You know, is the government watching me? Well, to be quite frank, are you worth watching? Yes? You can imagine, you know, with data being siphoned directly into GCHQ or into the NSA, you know, are you really that important that you actually think the government is watching you? So the first thing is, again, if you're not flagged up for any reason, there's absolutely nothing really to worry about. But if you're a bad guy, of course, there is a lot to worry about with that. So the customer concerns and risks that we have with Office moving to the cloud, moving to Office 365, moving to Windows Azure, we're really talking, obviously, I've got cybersecurity concerns here. I've got, what about my privacy? How do Microsoft ensure my privacy in the cloud? If I'm going to move my content to you in the cloud, how do I know that you're compliant? Now, just to give you an idea, I mean, we all know about the EU clauses, we all know about European safe harbor laws, ISO 27001 and things like that. And that's all very well, but if you're, you know, typically when you kept that kind of content on premises, you were in control of that content. Now that that content's in the cloud, you need to know that A, I'm still in control, and then I'm still compliant. So, for example, if you, for example, do work with an American healthcare provider or a medical organization, then you may need to be HIPAA compliant in the US. And again, Office 365, Windows Azure are all those things. But also it's about transparency as well. It's how Microsoft, how we can be transparent with the customers, you guys. So, you know, we're not hiding anything from you. It's your data. So it's all about protecting data. So it's about disclosure of personally identifiable information. How do we deal with the destruction of data? Who's got access to it? What about the threats of data modification or theft? How do we actually deal with that? And this man had a real impact, as I said, the Ed Snowden effect. Again, I actually believe he did the world a great service. You've now got all major browsers, all Microsoft connections, everything's HTTPS. Now, to be honest, you know, don't fool ourselves. If the government really wanted access to you, and as I said, if you were worth monitoring, if you were a terrorist or whatever, then, you know, pretty much the technology's out there to get you. So, you know, don't fool yourself. But if you're a genuine, ordinary company, corporation, whatever, then, you know, you're really pretty darn secure here. So I go and say that, of course, but then we go and read headlines like this, which is, it's a bit of a slap in the face. So, the US government basically say, no, Microsoft, you will hand over your email content from the Dublin data center. But hang on a minute, my data doesn't go through the US, so how can you request it? I got to tell you, by the way, Microsoft are fighting this, and this was a few months ago, 4 or 5 months ago. I got to tell you, they've still not handed this data over. Microsoft are taking this to the highest court in the US. So they are really fighting this. So this is not just a headline. And I was speaking with a number of the security guys in the Microsoft team last night. We were discussing this. So that's it. I mean, you know, I don't trust words. I want to see action. I want to see what you're actually doing to protect my data. And the first question is, where's my stuff? Who's got access to my stuff? So these are the kind of the primary questions. Where is my stuff? Who's got access to my data? And how to get notified if something does happen? I need to know what you share and what you don't share. And again, I'll let you read these slides later yourself. So just to let you understand that Microsoft are building data centers worldwide. The latest data center, of course, was just opened in India. And there are more data centers currently being built. Probably one of the largest that I've seen is the Dublin data center and also the Amsterdam data center. These things are enormous with thousands and thousands and thousands of servers. But as you can imagine, getting into the data center is pretty darn tough. You've got to have an invitation, a written invitation. You've got to have proof of ID, a government-issued ID. So you've got the gates, you've got the fences. In the US, you've got armed guards, you've got cameras, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, there's getting into the actual data center is pretty darn tough. So, of course, once you're in the data center, so it's a highly secured physical environment. What happens if it all goes horribly wrong and the thing falls over? Well, I got to tell you that, for example, the Dublin data center has two independent electricity suppliers into the center. So if one failed, there's a failover. Each of the data centers, and there are almost seven now, the seventh one is currently being built, has two enormous cat engines. These cat engines are the ones that drive ships, yes? And the accountants hate them because they're never used. And they cost like £15 million each, these enormous engines. So you can imagine that's millions and millions of pounds just sat there doing nothing. In fact, when I asked, the only thing that could really bring down a data center is an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse from a nuclear blast or something like that. That is really the only thing that could bring it down. But the key thing is, if the data center went down, then they have this redundancy model. So if you're in the EU like we are, Dublin, of course, goes directly into Amsterdam and so on. So your data does not go through the United States. Each data center has a small number of highly trained staff. Of course, we're talking, within the teens, number within the teens. So only a very, very small number of staff. Of course, there's contractors that go in. Now, just to give you an idea of how secure it is, you are assigned a job. So you go up to security, you're assigned a job. You're given a key to the room that you're assigned. That key is geotagged. Okay? So it follows you wherever you are in the data center. If you walk out the door with that key, you're fired immediately. If you go into a room that you're not authorized to go into, you're dismissed immediately. Okay? So just to give you an idea of the security that's involved with that. You go to the room, you go to the rack, you do your job, you close the door, you hand the key back. At any one time, there are at least three cameras on you. Okay? That's the kind of level of security that we're talking about. The other thing that I was going to say is separation of duties and roles. I was listening to Mark Rusinovich last night down on the show floor, and he was saying that, you know, what happens if you've got a hacked-off employee that decides to steal your data? To be honest, in the data centers, we have a separation of roles and duties. I have no idea what data is in that data center. Microsoft have over 200 services, internal and external. We have no idea what's on in the data center. What we do know is that this on these racks, it's public, so, you know, public stuff. And on these racks, it contains PII. So the difference is, if we destroy data, the public stuff, so things like Internet Explorer and all of those kind of stuff, Xbox and all that kind of stuff, those disks can be reused, are recycled. Anything with PII, publicly identifiable information, or privately identifiable information, these disks are never ever reused. They are thrown into a machine and they are clunked up. Yes, chunked. Okay? They're destroyed. So, very, very strict security policies and procedures. Manage data destruction policies, and as I've said, PII and non-PII is stored separately. Also, free and paid services are stored separately within a data center. Now, if you are a Microsoft partner, or if you are an MVP or an MCT, or you have an influencer or something like that, or you're a customer, then speak to your Microsoft person, because they do tours of the data centers. If you get a chance to tour it, I'm not talking about one of the small ones either. Get a chance to tour one of the big ones, and you'll get lost, I guarantee it. So you are in control, and basically this is an example of Windows Azure. So when you go into Windows Azure, you go and create a virtual machine. You actually select where that virtual machine is going to be stored. Excuse me. So you're in control. That's the Dublin data center, by the way. So taking action, so basically Microsoft are currently taking the US government to court over some of its privacy laws, okay? So Microsoft are not kind of, you know, bending over and taking it from the government, to coin a phrase. Now, what happens if a warrant is issued? So you are a suspected pedophile. You've got terrorist content in your account, and the government need to take a look at that. Well, of course, in that case, Microsoft look at every single warrant, every single legal request that comes in. So they don't just automatically hand over your content. Typically what they would do, depending on what they're asking, they may even contact you to give you an opportunity to take legal counsel. So these are just some of the things. And all this information, by the way, is available. In fact, they've got a, you know, visit the Windows Azure section downstairs on security. They've got some great people down there from the team. So when we talk about security, of course, we also need to talk about compliance. Compliance. This word seems to be coming out of my ears in the last few years. We all need to be compliant. So what are some of the tools and technologies that Microsoft are using creating that we can actually be compliant? Well, first of all, everybody has a security policy. So a security policy is like the general rules of the business. So for example, if I said I will not allow any public to come into the Microsoft data center, that's my policy. Okay? So how are you going to enforce that policy? Well, of course, you're going to need some kind of control mechanism, some kind of control framework with that. you're going to need to have certain standards that you'll need to meet. And ultimately, you're going to need to create operating procedures. So what am I going to the checks and check boxes and ticks to ensure that those procedures are met and ensure that those policies are met? So these are just some of the Office 365 and Windows Azure standards that are currently out there. In fact, there was a number of new ones just announced yesterday. And to be honest, I just found out about these last night. I've not added them to my slides. So there's a couple of additional ones as well. But these are the general current compliances with Microsoft. So the one obviously I'm really interested in is the EU model clauses and this safe harbor. I need to ensure that my data within the EU remains within the European Union. So, of course, one of our big concerns is I'm going to lose my data. I'm going to, how is my data lost? Well, there's a number of ways that you can obviously lose data. You could lose data through stupidity, through not, ensuring you need to prevent data leakage from your company. So we need to talk about how to prevent data leakage, and that can be anything from an employee sending out an inappropriate email to sharing a PowerPoint presentation that contains some sensitive information on the web. And, certain search engines, Google, are very, very good at finding this kind of content. So we need to ensure that content doesn't fall into the wrong hands. So we have things called, in Office 365, we have this thing called data loss prevention. So it helps you identify. So, for example, if I had, let's say, a credit card, and I put in a credit card number or an account number or something like that, it's designed to prevent data loss within my organization. So, for example, if I send out an email with an account number on, a credit card number, it might come back and it might go, you may not want to send that. You may want to think about that again. Or you could do it the other way. You could just say, absolutely, this is a credit card number. I'm sorry, we cannot send that out. So this is called data loss prevention. It can be customized. And the great thing is, yes, you get a few templates that you can use. But the great thing is we also have, there's templates pretty much for every country in Europe, Middle East, and Africa there. And to be honest, everything can be customized. So if you don't see, for example, the Norwegian one there, you can download it and you can even create your own as well. So these are coming online all the time. So you also have these, as I mentioned, templates. They're built into Office 365. You can also import your own DLP policies. And again, they're really, really easy to use. So I'm just going to flip over here to, this is my Office 365 account. I'm going to go into my admin center. And just to give you an idea of how this works, I'm going to go into Exchange Online. I'm just going to put Zoom it on here. Thank you, Mark Rusinovich. Okay. So one of the things I want to do is, obviously, there's a few areas that I'm really interested in terms of security. One of those is protection, and, of course, one is things like mail flow. So you can see that, for example, in protection, you've got things like spam control, antivirus, and things like that. You've got mail flow, so controlling how mail comes in and out of your organization. Very similar things that we've had in Exchange for quite a number of years. But the interesting thing here is this compliance management area here. So in here, we've got things like in-place e-discovery and hold, where you can place mailboxes or users on legal hold. Auditing, data loss prevention, retention policies, retention tags, and journaling rules. So this is really the areas that we're looking for here. So the first one of these that I'm going to show you is the data loss prevention. By the way, if you don't have an Office 365 account, you can try it out for 30 days. Again, this is the E3 plan that I'm demoing here today. So you can see that I can go ahead. Do I want to create a new DLP template from a template? Do you want to import your own, or do you want to create your own custom one? So as I say, completely easy to use. So let me just show you some of the pre-created ones that are here. So I'm just going to call this test, and I'm going to go. So we can see here that it's not just European Union. In fact, these are kind of everywhere. So I'm from the UK, for example. So you can see that here in the UK, there's some there from Saudi Arabia. There's the Middle East, Africa, the US. So they're all in here. So again, if you have to be compliant, you can use one of those data loss prevention templates there. Okay, so do have a look at those, have a play around with them. As I say, you can try Office 365 for free. And you might say, you know, okay, that's nice, but, you know, how do I prevent actual data being lost out of my organization? So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to flip over to Microsoft's favorite search engine. Okay. And, you know, when you search for something, okay, whether this is Bing or whether it's Google or what have you. So if I did a search, so I'm just going to search on CNN. So what is Google? Shout it out. What is Google? It's a search engine. What can you actually search for in Google? Pretty much anything you like. Okay, so if I did an advanced search here, for example, okay, so if I said, okay, site, let's say com, I will say, let's search for a file type, or I could search for an open webcam, but I wouldn't do that because I'd be afraid of what I might find. I'm going to look for an Excel spreadsheet, and I might say, okay, what do you want to search for in your Excel spreadsheet? I might say membership list, okay? So this is commonly known as Google hacking, yes? So I can, for example, if I said in URL, search for, you know, open webcams, search for, you know, printers, HP printers that are connected to the internet, you get free printing. So you can see that I'm now putting on this filter and I get, obviously, just Excel spreadsheets. Now, obviously, if this is membership lists with people's names and addresses, you don't really want this content kind of leaking out there, do you? I can obviously, let's just see if we've got anybody here. Now, again, this might be nothing or it might be something. Sometimes, okay, so that's just an empty one. But, you know, the idea is you can go through there. In fact, let's make it more interesting. Let's say mil. Let's say PDF. And let's say classified. Because nobody would be that stupid, right? Okay. Okay, and you can see classified documents. There you go. Oh, my God. So there's stuff out there that really shouldn't be there. Now, just to prove a point, by the way, if I go into, I can even automate that with my, you'll excuse the expression of this tool, but fucker. And this is an old tool. I mean, it's been out a few years now, and it does all kinds of things like vulnerability scanning. You may have seen Marcus Murray show this tool. But the one area that I really like is this, the metadata. Now, you'll remember that earlier this year, President Bush, sorry, not Bush, the other one. Yeah. The President, Obama, he came out and he basically said, yes, we maybe monitor your content, but we don't monitor the actual content of your phone calls. We don't monitor your email content. We only monitor the metadata. Okay, that's okay. So if I'm standing at a bridge and I phone the suicide hotline at 2:30 in the morning, they've got the geosynchronous, you know, location of where I am. They've got the phone logs, but they don't know the content of the conversation. Yes? So sometimes metadata can be way more powerful than the actual information itself. So here's one I made earlier. Now, I live in Stirling in Scotland, so and they're really terrible at security here. So this is a government organization. So this tool, off it goes, and it will rip their entire organization of every single PDF on there, every single Excel spreadsheet, every single document, everything. And it will just keep going, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands of them. I'll stop that right now. So I can go in here and I can say, yeah, okay, let's download all of those. So I'll download them all. I will then, hey, okay, I will now extract the metadata from all of those. You know, so just in that few documents, I now have a list of usernames. Okay, I now know what software they're using. Office 95, are you kidding me? Okay. Okay. So, you see what I'm saying? Stupid people put stupid things out there. And then you've got, you know, people, you know, that penetration testers that come in and they test the network. And, you know, we've told you many, many times to remove this kind of stuff from your network. Now, if you want to get really smart, by the way, that's Fokker. May I recommend, but don't quote me on this, evil Fokker. but I'm not going to go there today because I want to keep my job, okay? Okay, so the key thing is then you need to prevent data loss within your organization, yes? So we need to prevent that. Okay, so what about data retention policies? Okay, so what are retention policies? Now, you know, I had a really interesting conversation with a guy in Norway, actually, a few weeks ago. And he says to me, Andy, I need to keep my data in Office 365 for 1 year. I went, okay, that must be pretty simple, a data retention policy. Yeah, it doesn't work. I tried it and it was deleted after 14 days. What? Okay, so we did a little investigation. I emailed a senior product manager. Oh, hang on a minute, I better send this to a developer. I better send, and it went round the houses, this conversation. And you think a simple thing like this, you know, how complex can it be? So first of all, what a retention policy is, basically, if the user deletes a document in Office 365 or in SharePoint or whatever, or in Exchange, that document is gone after 14 days, essentially. 14 days, it goes into like a recycle container, and then it's emptied. Now, on a per-user basis, you can extend that to 30 days. It's a PowerShell command. I'll show you in a second. Okay? You can extend it to 30 days. But so retention policies are essentially an additional thing to protect from the item being deleted. Retention policies specify how long a message is kept and what action is taken at the end of that time period. So when the message reaches its retention period, you can either say, hey, let's archive that message, or we'll actually go ahead and delete it. Retention, you can have retention policies, and retention policies contain retention tags. So what about deleted items retention then? So essentially, deleted items retention essentially tells you how long the item is going to stay in the recoverable items folder. So either emptying the deleted items folder, or when you press shift and delete, that item is gone completely. I'd just like to point out the retention period has nothing to do with the retention policy, okay? What it does do, though, as I say, it allows the user a second chance to recover their items. So the deleted items retention. So by default, as I say, it goes into this recycle bin for about 14 days. Now, if you want to extend that, you can use this PowerShell command, set-mailbox, the identity, the name of the mailbox, retain deleted items for 30 days. And that's the maximum. Okay? There is a very good TechNet article on this, by the way. This is the alternate. So there's an alternate command there as well. And again, there's another one here as well that you can do. Okay? Can I do more than one? Of course you can. You can do all of them if you want to. So how does this work with retention tags then? So I'll show you in a second retention tags. So delete and allow recovery. Essentially, retention tags, what they do is they don't, it will still go into the deleted items container, but the user needs to have an archive mailbox for Exchange, for example. So it needs to, when you mark an item, I want to keep this item for a year, it essentially is moving that item. It's either going to be deleted or it's moving it into the user's archive. If you chose permanently delete, though, so at the end of the retention period, if I chose to permanently delete that, it will be gone forever. Not even the administrator will be able to recover that back. The only option here is to place the item on in-place hold or litigation hold. That's the only way that you can keep that item beyond that 30 days or beyond that 14 days. You need to put the item on litigation hold. So, can I have a one-year retention policy was the question? Absolutely, okay? If you want to provide them, you can use this technology, use retention policies, retention tags, but the key thing is that it's included in all Office 365 plans. It doesn't really retain the item. It simply either deletes it or it moves it to the archive. So in-place litigation hold are the only features that if you want to maintain this. And the key thing to remember here, you must have Exchange Plan 2 here. So you must have an Office 365 account that has Exchange Plan 2. So some of the lower end, kind of smaller business type accounts may not have this feature. So just be aware of that. Okay. So what the deleted user leaves behind, so for example, let's say OneDrive, for example. So in a OneDrive, what you can do, if the user is deleted or moved, you can actually, as long as you've got the manager field put in, you can assign a manager to this mailbox or to this OneDrive. And essentially, if that user leaves the company, that manager is emailed and it will give him access to that OneDrive for up to 30 days before that content is removed. So that's pretty good. That's pretty useful. Okay? So, Exchange online litigation, legal hold, really easy to do. Again, I'm just going to go back to Office 365 here. I'm going to go to in-place discovery here. Here's one I made earlier. So I'll just delete that. I'll create another one for you. Just give it a second. You know, that's the moment when you click things and you wish that you hadn't. Okay, so I'm going to click on here. Again, we'll call this BCN demo. I'm going to go next. And I'm going to say, okay, which mailboxes here do I want to basically place on hold? So I'm going to search all mailboxes. I'm going to specify mailboxes. I'm going to say, what the hell, we're going to do all mailboxes, okay? So I'm then going to say, okay, by the way, the reason why it's gray here is because these users actually haven't logged on. I've created mailboxes, but they haven't logged on yet. So it's just showing you anyway. So what do I want to basically search for? All the content. So show me everything, please. You can also filter the criteria, date, time, to, from, all of that kind of stuff. I'm just going to click next. Okay, do you want to place the content on in-place hold? Do you want to hold it indefinitely? Again, it's grayed out. The reason being is I've not logged on with any users. But you get the idea. So I want to hold this indefinitely. Okay, so there we go. That it will now place all my mailboxes on legal hold. All right? Now, then what I can then do, of course, is I can then start going into my retention policies. So in my retention, here's one I made earlier. So here's my default mailbox retention policy. And of course, this is all kind of controlled by users. So it means that I can the user can, if a message comes in from an accountant or something, I can right-click the message and I can say, yeah, I want to apply this retention tag to this message. You can obviously automate this process as well. So sounds good. And I can say, yeah, I just want to go ahead and save that. That's fine. You can also add in other retention tags as well. So these retention tags are here. And you can see, you get quite a few demo ones here. So 6 months delete, 2 years archive. You see move to archive there. So if I chose to, let's say, 1 year delete here. So basically what we're saying is, 1 year delete, are you going to allow delete and allow recovery? So allow recovery, it will essentially move it into that that recycle bin for 14 days, of which the user can then recover that item. Are you going to permanently delete it? So if you chose that, beyond that, once it's emptied, you would never be able to recover that document. Or do you want to move it to an actual user's archive? So that's just showing you there how these are actually created and how they're set up. Okay, so moving on. The next thing then we need to talk about is obviously auditing. So I've already mentioned that in the Microsoft data center, everything is audited. So obviously you can't walk up to a data center and go, I'd like to audit you, please. Yeah, you can imagine there'd be a big long line of people. So this is done on your behalf. Now you can actually go, if you go to trustoffice365.com, trustazure.com, websites like that, you can actually, each of the Microsoft centers have their own what we call security trust sites, and you can actually go in and view the latest audit reports. Now, on saying that, there is an amount of auditing that you can actually do yourself. So as well as the kind of predefined things that Microsoft provide for you, there are a few things that you can actually do yourself. So again, if I come into things like auditing here, so I'm still in the compliance management area, but if I have a look in the actual auditing, you can have a look at some of the reports here. So you can, for example, I can run an e-discovery in-place hold report. So which mailboxes are currently on legal hold? What's the status of those? You can say, I want to run a mailbox litigation hold report. You can say, I want to run an admin audit. So you can even audit all your administrators in Office 365 and also Windows Azure as well. I'd like to point out, by the way, that if you're signed up to Windows Azure, this is just a demo account, but if you're signed up to Windows Azure, there are also additional reports that you can have access to as well. The interesting one, by the way, is this. Run the external admin log report. So what are they doing at the data center? Who's accessing your data at the data center? This is, again, an example of how Microsoft are being compliant with us. Sorry, my Skype's just coming up. Let me just switch that off. Okay. So that is an example of some of the kind of auditing features, as I said. Okay, so now we come to my favorite topic, and my topic is identity. So as I mentioned yesterday, the two primary things, you know, about validating yourself is authentication. How do you get authenticated into the cloud? So you're just going to log in, through a web portal? Are you going to have some kind of Active Directory connection? So if you have an Active Directory connection, are you going to use a technology called DirSync, which is essentially just an appliance? So it connects and it pulls all the users into Office 365. We had a new feature that was enabled last year. It was called Password Sync. So it now means that you can have a single sign-on type solution without having an Active Directory Federation service, which is really nice for small companies, by the way. But if you're a very large company, of course, it could be a little bit more complex. So currently in the Microsoft space, we have two types of identity. We have a Microsoft account, so Xbox account, Xbox Live, where you've got Outlook.com type thing. And you've also got the Azure Active Directory accounts, so a corporate account, the likes of Office 365, Windows Azure, Windows Intune, and so on. And essentially, in the data center, by the way, these two are kept separate, so they are separate in there. So the key thing is, obviously, you need to determine what kind of account it is that you want to use. So if you're connecting to Office 365, we need to think about, okay, what type of identity am I using? Am I just using a cloud identity? Now, if you're a small mom and pop shop, Joe Soap, you know, that's easy. You know, there's no on-premises residue. He's got no need for Active Directory. You know, you've migrated him to the cloud. You've kicked over that server and thrown a tablecloth over it. It's no longer required. So whereas, obviously, synchronization accounts, so if it's a small to medium-sized organization, we can obviously just use Azure Active Directory, DirSync, and Password Sync there. So there's no need for things like federation services. So Active Directory Federation Service, as you know, is this token passing service. So one of the nice things about that, by the way, go and see John Craddock's session. He does a great session on Active Directory Federation Services. But in a nutshell, a token passing service uses what we call SAML tokens, Secure Accounts Markup Language. And essentially, you create a list of claims, what we call claim rules. So, hey, you know, my name is Bob. If I'm a member of the sales group, when I log on, it's going to come to the Active Directory Federation server, and it's going to go, yeah, okay, Bob, yeah, you are a member of the sales. I'm going to give you an outgoing claim token. So I then take that outgoing claim token to Office 365 or Windows Azure. It looks at the token. It goes, yeah, okay, we have a deal. Here's an acceptance token, and you get your connection. So that is what we call true single sign-on. So the likes of Windows Server 2012 and also the new Windows Server 10, some of the Active Directory Federation Services features there are really quite exciting, specifically that you can federate individual applications, and that's really quite exciting. So that is that. This is, again, just an overview just to show you which identity solution that you need. So again, you don't need to give everybody the largest solution if they only need a small amount. But Password Sync is really quite useful. Now, in terms of Active Directory Federation Services, let me just give you a quick walkthrough of deploying Active Directory Federation Services. So the first thing here is I've created a DNS record, FS Federation Server, with my IP address. I'm now going to go into my Windows Server 2012. I'm going to click on Manage, and I'm going to add in a role. And of course, that role is going to be Active Directory Federation Services. So I'm just going to go ahead and install the role. Okay, so when you install the role, obviously I'll install all the additional bits and pieces with it, but it actually then says, okay, what is it you want to install? By the way, this is the version that's on Windows Server 2012, not 2012 R2, by the way. I'm going to click Next. Do you want to install just the server role, or do you want to install a proxy? Now, it's considered not good practice to expose a federation server directly to the front-facing side of a website. So in the old days, we might have used Forefront here, Foppy. But now, of course, most hardware-based routers have a Federation proxy agent in them. So I'm just going to click on Next. The other thing that I want to do is, of course, I'm just going to create a user account here. So this is just a service account that I'm going to use. And this is just a local one. Okay, just click Next. Okay, so I'm going to basically say user can't change the password. Password never expires. You know, you can always tell an old timer when we do that. Right, and that's that. So now I'm just going to assign permissions to that particular user account. So I'm just assigning a little PowerShell command. So I've now assigned the user access to that service. So now what I'm going to do is, of course, the next thing is I need to now assign a certificate to that. So because ADFS, if I try to run it now, it would give me an error message because it needs an SSL connection. So I'm going to put in my certificate. So I'm just going to import this. And next. Okay, looks good. Okay, click OK. And okay, that's the certificate installed. Let's just check. So I'm going into my admin staffin, and I'm going to just open up my local certificates. And I'm going to go to the computer account, next, and just double check that this is actually installed. Looks good to me. Okay, so there we go. My certificate is installed and ready to go. So the next thing I need to do, of course, is in IIS, I now need to bind that certificate to port 43. So I'm just going into IIS. I'm selecting HTTPS. And I'm choosing 443. And again, I'm just going to click on the drop-down arrow, and there's the certificate that I'm going to use here. Click OK, and we're good to go. So now that we've done that, I'm now going to go into Federation Services. Here's the Federation Services wizard. I'm now going to run the wizard. And do I want to create a service or do I want to join a service? So a good clue, by the way, is to always create a Federation server farm because then you can have additional servers join the farm for load balancing and clustering. Okay, it picked up my certificate. I just now need to select my service account that I've created. So ADFS and just check the name. Click OK. Put in the password and we're good to go. And click on Next. As if by magic, it suddenly appears. Okay. So now that I've done that, what I'm doing, I know you can't see this, but I'll record these so you can see it. I'm saying connect-msl service. And what I'm doing is I'm now upgrading my domain into a federated domain. So what's the current status? I've registered my domain in Office 365, but it's just a managed domain at the moment. Yes. So what I now need to do is I now need to change that into a federated domain. So I'm typing in set-msl ADFS context, the name of the computer, which in this case is DC1, a fully qualified domain name. And there we go. So now I'm going to say convert dash MSL domain federated dash domain and the domain name. Okay, and now I go back and run that original command again, set MSL domain, and you can now see that I have now successfully federated that domain in Office 365. Great. So what I'm doing here, just to prove that, is I'm now flipped over to another machine and I'm logging on as a federated user. So you can see I'm now logging on to my Windows machine, and it's successfully logged on, and it's now just going through the setup of that machine for him. Okay. So that's the first thing. Active Directory Federation Services. Really quite simple to set up. Well, actually, it's not so simple to set up. It's quite, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. Obviously, you've got to think about how the user's going to connect through the firewall. As I mentioned, it's not good practice to expose a federation server to the public-facing side of a firewall. What you would typically do is you would set up a proxy and then proxy that back to the ADFS server. Likewise, it's not good practice just to have one federation server. A potential failover. Well, I'm actually saying it's a potential failover, but actually not now, because if you've got dir sync and password sync in place, then if the ADFS server failed over, your users would still be able to log on. But the problems with dir sync, of course, is that dir sync still resides in a SQL Server database. So potentially, there's a scaling issue with that. So I'm going to flip over then to, this is my Active Directory. Basically, this is the tool that's replacing dir sync. This is called the Azure Active Directory sync tool. So what I'm doing here is I've actually just gone ahead and installed the tool, but it's not configured yet. So once you've installed the tools, there are some service accounts down at the bottom, some groups. So I'm essentially just adding a service account to the members of those groups. So, of course, in the cloud, everything is to do with identity. So it's so important, authentication and authorization. So I'm connecting to Azure AD. Now, one of the real disadvantages with dir sync is that you can only connect to one domain, whereas AAD sync allows you to connect to multiple forests. So in this case, I'm connecting to my Office 365 account here. And again, you need to put the forest that you want to connect into Azure Active Directory. So just my onprem.local, so this is my local domain, the name of my administrator. So onprem/administrator. Okay. So now you can see that, and I could just go again now. I could just go and add another forest and another forest and another forest. So if you're a consultant, you can obviously add multiple forests in here. Now, at the moment, I'm bringing them in through their, obviously, their user principal name. But this is just to show you that AAD sync is far more flexible than just dir sync, and it's highly customizable. So you can actually even use your own attributes to link the items together. So again, you need to be able to uniquely identify your users in that domain. And again, this may differ from domain to domain. So this is what makes this product so exciting. So are you looking to do an Exchange hybrid deployment? Do you want to do password write back? So if you've got the new Azure Active Directory, the paid services, there is a self-service portal there where users can actually change their passwords and it gets written back to Office 365. Do you want to, are you happy with these? Are there any additional apps that you want to sync? So again, you can select those. Again, I'm just going to click on next. Looks good to me. And I just want to go ahead and synchronize the directory now. Okay, so now in Office 365, if I go to my users and I select a user here, you can now see that this has been synced with Active Directory on-prem. And all I now need to do, by the way, is I can now assign that user a license. I can set the location, which we talked about earlier, which is really important. And again, the mailbox hadn't moved there because I haven't migrated the mailbox yet. So that's just what that little message is that I got there. So I've created the user account, I've licensed the user, but I've not actually moved the mailbox over yet. Okay, so that's just a little bit about identity in Office 365. So what I showed you there was Active Directory Federation Services, setting that up. I spoke about setting up DirSync and AADSync here in order to sync your on-premises Active Directory directly into Windows Azure Active Directory. So I suppose we have to have a conversation about privacy. Because privacy, I don't know about you, but it is really important to me. Although you wouldn't think it, the way that people, the people that what they send in Facebook and what they say in Twitter and things like that. You've got to remember that, you know, people, you're very, very concerned about privacy, but in the public space, you're very free with your information. So, obviously, Office 365 has built-in privacy, so does Windows Azure. One thing I will say about the paid services, you will never see any advertising in the paid services. Microsoft never share your data with anyone. So in a Microsoft data center, it's just Microsoft data. They never share it with any third parties. Okay? And again, we spoke about transparency already. So obviously, there is, as we move forward in the cloud space, there are going to be situations where you're going to federate your data with multiple external vendors. So you need to think about how are we going to secure that. And one of the ways that we do that, of course, is through encryption. So we've already spoke there about SSL encryption. So data in transit is secured through SSL. Likewise, the data between the data centers themselves is also encrypted with technologies like SSL, EAP, TLS, and so on. Now, we just announced yesterday as well that SharePoint, all data in SharePoint, is now encrypted at rest with BitLocker, along with, of course, which has been done for a while, Exchange. So technologies like the Exchange databases, the log files, all of this stuff is encrypted at rest with BitLocker encryption. We also have end-to-end encryption between servers, so whatever you've got on-premises to obviously what you've got in the cloud. And again, this is encrypted through TLS security. Other encryption technologies built in, we have message encryption as well that you can switch on for an individual user. So message, if you were a doctor or a lawyer and you're sending confidential documents, you can encrypt that. So if I needed to access that, all I need is either a Microsoft account or a cloud account with Microsoft. But it's really quite useful. So internal sharing of sensitive data. So this is what we've been speaking about today. You know, how can we restrict that data? Well, Microsoft, of course, have this, and this is a technology that's really improving, and you're going to see some great improvements with this in the Windows 10 timeframe. So rights management services, this is just a quick kind of, that was a demo I showed you earlier. So that's the Google demo that I showed you earlier. I combined them. So rights management options. Now, rights management has been around for quite some time in Active Directory. So as part of Active Directory rights management services, you could, for example, if I was in Outlook or if I was in PowerPoint, I could say, I want to protect this document, not just with a password, which is easy, but I essentially want to say, hey, I want to protect the document, but I want to say, okay, you can view the document, but you can't cut, copy, and paste from it. You're not allowed to forward the document. And you could even say this document will, you know, expire in X number of days, like Mission Impossible. Okay, so it's a really, really very useful feature. And I showed you how easy it is to get content from Google or from another browser. So people don't realize what they're sharing. And the problem is, it's because we're accessing that data with multiple devices. So Office has been fully integrated with rights management services. So again, it encrypts the data. And the great thing about this technology is it provides the data with a call home feature. So irrespective of where I send that data to, so if I accidentally sent you an email containing that file, when you open it up, it will always try and call home. It will say, hang on a minute, you know, you don't have those rights. So it's a very, very useful tool. So this is just a quick walkthrough of it. So here, if I go and actually enable this, so just rights management, I'm just going to manage this. I need to switch it on first. So once it's been activated, I'm then going to actually flip over to Microsoft Word. I'm going to go into protection. Yeah, I'm going to restrict the access, and I'm saying that this document is only available to internal users. Okay, so you can see that. Now what I'm going to do is I'm now going to just send this across to a colleague. But I'm going to make the mistake. I'm an internal user, but I'm sending it to an external user. Obviously, this is something that you would never really do. And hopefully, user education would prevail here. But unfortunately, it's not always the case. I'm going to attach the document. So here's the NDA document that I'm essentially sending. And now, once I've sent that, I'm now going to flip over as that other user. And I'll open this document. And you can see here now, when I click on that document, it goes, I'm sorry, this document is rights protected. So that's proving that it follows through with the user. So irrespective of where that document goes on any device, it will always call back. Now, that technology is really evolving, and it's turning out to be a really exciting technology, actually. So the question was, does it work with other applications? And yes, it does. So obviously there are a number of third-party vendors which are locking now into Microsoft technologies, things like PDFs, and you're going to see a huge improvement in rights management. So it's going to, you know, it's going to scale with multiple applications across multiple platforms. So rights management is definitely something to watch. Okay. By the way, is it the be-all and end-all? Are these technologies the be-all and end-all? Is it going to keep you totally secure? Probably not on their own. I mean, BitLocker, you know, drive protection, I can still access it remotely and things. But the idea is with good security policies, you combine all of these things together, and they will generally make you a lot more secure than we've been. And it's all really about good practices. So I have these kind of 8 cloud principles here. So just remember, in the Azure and Office 365 space, services are highly configurable, but not necessarily customizable. So you can essentially, you can pick and choose, but you can't really customize them. So you need, the key thing here is you need to have the correct SKU for your business. So remember, you know, things like the putting a mailbox on hold. You need to make sure that you've got the SKU that's got Exchange Plan 2 in there, for example. Services come under the security policy at Microsoft. Transparency, we spoke about that. Audit on your behalf. Now, this is an interesting one, by the way. Microsoft's liability is capped to industry standards. What does that mean? So it's capped to 12 months service fees. So if it all goes horribly wrong, you'll get 12 months service fees back. Okay? So just be aware of that. But that's the same as every vendor. Every vendor is the same. Okay? The other thing, Office 365 is an evergreen service. Now, from a security standpoint, you need to be prepared for that. Yes, Microsoft are going to give you the latest and greatest stuff, but you need to keep your stuff the latest and greatest. You need to keep your systems up to date. You need to keep them patched. Okay? That's your commitment that you're making to Microsoft. There is a documented roadmap. Make sure that you're aware of this. So know where the product is going. It's not like products anymore. You know that Windows Server R2 is coming out, so I know the features. Services are not like that. They can change on a monthly basis. You need to be aware of that. Again, there is help. You know, obviously, there's paid services and non-paid services that Microsoft will do to help. Now, as I mentioned, the cloud trust centers, there's one for Azure here, and there's also one for Office 365. So definitely take a look at those, okay? So there we go. We've talked about the changing world of the industrial internet. We've talked about your concern. We've talked about how Ed Snowden has an effect. Where's your staff compliance and so on? So I hope that that's given you a little taster. Now, as I mentioned, I'm here, well, actually, I'm in C1 tomorrow for the Dark Web Rises, so a journey to the dark side of the Tor network. As I mentioned, I'm going to put down a bunch of these bookmarks, so you could win one tomorrow. And if you feel really guilty and you can't wait, then you could always buy one, okay? you can meet me. So if you're doing nothing this afternoon, come along and see me downstairs between 2 and 2:30. I would love to have your questions and your feedback and all of that. And you've, what can I say? You've been absolutely awesome. I have, there you go. Please complete the evaluation. And what can I say? My name is Andy Malone. Thank you very much.